Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, November 29th. I'm Joel Ficklin, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Mattole River Nonprofit reports record-breaking rainfall during storm. Governor Newsom touts Delta Tunnel project, environmentalists remain critical. And the KMUD News Sports Report. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. An environmental nonprofit near the headwaters of the Mattole River recorded record-breaking rainfalls during last week's storm. Over 25% of last year's total rainfall. Lauren Schmidt reports.
That is the sound of the Mattole River flowing near a popular swimming hole in Whitethorn, and a common resting place for salmon making their journey from the ocean back to the headwaters to spawn. During last week's bomb cyclone turned atmospheric river, the Mattole River rose to over 16 feet at the Ettersburg gauge, though the current USGS data shows it has now receded to just over 11. To learn more about rainfall totals and the storm's effects on the Mattole, we checked in with the environmental nonprofit Sanctuary Forest, whose water program monitors the river's flows and manages projects to improve its health.
Yeah, so my name is Anna Rogers, and I'm the education director for Sanctuary Forest, and we're a land and water trust in Whitethorn.
Last month marked the beginning of a new water year.
Hydrological year or water year starts October 1st of a given year and ends September 30th of the following year. So it encompasses a full year, but it starts basically when the wet season generally begins. So that's how hydrologists measure water, basically, rainfall, stream flow, things like that.
Roger says last year, October 2023 to 24, was a good water year, breaking the previous two-year cycle of extreme drought.
We had just over 100 inches. It came to 106.52 inches of rain for the 2024 water year, which is great. Looking at the last 13 years or so, that's definitely up in the top few years. Sometimes we have gotten as much as 132 inches. That was in 2017. So that was great. But we definitely like to see at least 100, ideally.
During those drought years, Sanctuary Forest recorded only 50 to 60 inches of rain. But this past water year, however, doubled those totals.
Yes. So say the 2014 water year, so that encompasses the end of 2013 into 2014, there was 44.58 inches for the whole water year. And that's considered a very bad drought year, like maybe one of the worst in recorded history. Things have been looking better lately, and we're definitely off to a good start for this year.
October, the first month of the water year, saw 3 inches of rain. But this November brought an above-average increase.
In November, as we all are aware, we had the bomb cyclone followed by the atmospheric river. So it made good on its promises, I would say. We received a total of 25.32 inches in November.
For perspective, that storm alone delivered over a quarter of last year's total rainfall amount.
So we are already at a total of 28.35 inches for the water year so far since it began in October.
Rogers said this was the wettest November Sanctuary Forest has recorded in over a decade.
That's definitely our best November since 2012.
With the headwaters of the Mattole receiving over 25 inches of rain, it was enough to bring the watershed out of forbearance, which began in July when the Mattole hit 0.7 cubic feet per second. Rogers explains.
So our storage and forbearance program, or forbearance program as it's known, is a program in which certain areas of the headwaters of the Mattol River have been provided with water tanks for private landowners. And a couple of public institutions, the elementary school in Whitethorn is one of our participants, as is Whitethorn Construction. So they have water tanks on their property that they fill during high flows, so now, and then they stop pumping during the dry season. So that's the reason, one of the main reasons why we monitor the stream flow of the Mattol River and its tributaries, so that we can keep an eye on what the flows are and let people know when to stop pumping out of the main stem and its tributaries.
While this rain has significant positive impacts, Rogers notes that in a perfect water year, the rain would be staggered and last into late spring, supplementing flows into the summer.
Obviously, we like to see a lot of rain this time of year. We've been waiting for rain all season. We want fire season to end, you know, the creeks are getting low, and we want the fish to, you know, have that water to be able to migrate upstream and all of that. But we also want to see sustained rain throughout the wet season, and we want to see late spring rains most of all, because that is what ends up lasting through the dry season. If we get 3 inches of rain in June, like, we're good. So we're always hoping for that.
In water years where spring rain is absent, Sanctuary Forest mimics rain with stream flow augmentation through their String of Pearls pond project, where they release water from the ponds into the Mattol.
You know, the goal with those different pond projects that we've been piloting is, how can we augment the stream flow in some way to last longer into the dry season, you know, by holding the rainfall in these ponds and then allowing it to release into the stream nearby, then we're hoping to, you know, kind of boost that stream flow a little bit.
The environmental nonprofit also uses in-stream structures to resemble beaver dams to retain flows in the watershed longer.
Right, yeah, slowing the water down, letting it kind of just percolate into the ground and release slowly, because that's the key for the Mattol River is groundwater. So we don't have snowpack to give us water during the dry season like you do, you know, east of us.
The mouth of the Mattol, where it meets the ocean in Petrolia, has opened wide enough for anadromous fish to begin migrating back to their birthplace to continue the cycle of life. So we asked if the current population numbers have been documented.
We've seen a lot of spawners in the eel. We haven't really seen any up in our neck of the woods yet in the Mattol. They're coming all the way up from Petrolia, and, you know, by the time they reach Whitethorn Junction, say, they're, you know, they're getting close to the headwaters, and they're stopping along the way of wherever it was that they were spawned, and wherever they can get to, too. So if the flows are really low, they might spawn in a place that they are not intending to, just because they need to spawn, you know. But we are seeing high enough flows that they are able to get to where they're going as long as they're coming. So I know that the spawner surveys are happening now, and we hope to hear some word soon on where they are.
In the Eel River, the Eel River Recovery Project estimates that 15,000 to 20,000 salmon have been spotted. We'll bring you an update from that watershed early next week. In closing, Roger says an important anniversary is around the corner, and she's inviting the community to celebrate, to raise funds to continue their efforts.
This year is the 25th anniversary of Luna's preservation. So for those of you who don't know who Luna is, it is the ancient redwood tree that was saved by Julia Butterfly Hill's tree sit. And so 25 years ago, she was able to descend the tree December 18th. And so we are having a celebration, and Julia will be there. This is like a once in a lifetime opportunity for a big anniversary like this to have Julia there, and she'll be giving a talk. And this is a fundraiser for Sanctuary Forest. So it's happening on Saturday, December 14th at the Scotia Lodge. And you can learn more at our website, and you can buy tickets there too at sanctuaryforest.org.
You can learn more about the Matole Watershed, their projects, and the upcoming fundraiser, Luna, a Beacon of Hope, at sanctuaryforest.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
In state news, Governor Newsom touts Delta Tunnel project. Environmentalists remain critical. Vic Bedoyan reports.
Carol E. Krieger has been a critic of the state's water policies and actions for decades as an activist with the California Water Impact Network. She says it's way too early to declare victory for a project opponents call a boondoggle.
If this is going to be a $20 billion project plus overruns, I don't think that the ratepayers are really prepared to pay what it's going to cost, especially when there's so little benefits that really accrue from it.
The state has called the project the Delta Conveyance. It's a tunnel 40 miles long and as wide as the freeway. It would divert Sacramento River water before it reaches the Delta. Some scientists fear that would further starve the Delta ecosystem, which they say is already in a state of partial collapse. Carol E. Krieger insists the state and federal agencies have pledged more water than could possibly be delivered.
They have promised 5 times more water rights than actual water exists, according to the state board's own water rights records. Not someone saying it, it's them saying it from their own records. So how could anyone be responsibly going forward with a project like this with so many problems and so many uncertainties? And the cost of it is another huge thing. I don't think the ratepayers realize that this is all going to be on them.
Krieger predicts that paying for the tunnel will substantially increase the cost of water for farmers and residents in impacted water districts. Meanwhile, scientists warn that Delta smelt, once the Delta's most abundant species, is nearing extinction in the wild, and salmon and other fish species struggle to survive.
It's going to make it much, much worse. There'll be more saltwater intrusion, and the farmers who have farmed in the Delta and have the senior water rights, because they farmed much longer than the farmers in the San Joaquin, they're the ones getting screwed.
However, Governor Newsom says the tunnel is necessary so that the state can adapt to climate whiplash. He claims that, quote, during atmospheric rivers this year, the Delta Conveyance Project could have captured enough water for 9.8 million people's yearly usage, unquote. But Carol E. Krieger says the project will not serve the general public. She insists that it serves as a political payback for large-scale farming corporations and political donors. She calls the Delta Tunnel an ongoing myth that has not solved California's water problems.
The can keeps getting kicked down the road, basically, with, you know, from the early 1980s with the Peripheral Canal to today, there has been one project after another that is touted as solving the problem, but can never solve the problem because basically they don't have the water, the real wet water. There's paper water. There's lots of paper promises in contracts and by the state board's own admission in their own water rights records. They don't have the water to fulfill what they've promised.
The State Water Board is currently holding a series of workshops. The Water Board is expected to make a final decision on whether to go forward with the controversial Delta Tunnel project in the coming months. Vic Bedoyan reporting for KPFA News and KFCF Radio.
In national news, Trump names former immigration chief Tom Homan as new border czar. Aline Alfandari reports.
As a candidate, Donald Trump repeatedly railed against immigrants on the campaign trail, calling them vermin and violent criminals, and vowing mass deportations. Trump has appointed as his border czar Tom Homan, who led the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, in the first Trump administration. Homan traveled Tuesday to the Texas-Mexico border, where he vowed to fulfill what could be the largest mass deportations in U.S. history once Trump takes office.
Let me be clear. There is going to be a mass deportation because we just finished a mass illegal immigration crisis on the border. We've had enough crime in this country, illegal alien crime. It's time to end it and stop it.
According to a Pew Research Center report in 2022, California has the highest population of undocumented immigrants, an estimated 1.8 million. Texas was second with 1.6 million. While California and other blue states have said they'll refuse to cooperate with Trump's planned mass deportations, red states like Texas are ready and willing to go. Texas Republican Governor Greg Abbott joined Homan at the event with the Texas National Guard, which is patrolling the border. Abbott doubled down on the theme of dangerous immigrants, even though statistics show that immigrants commit violent and drug crimes at substantially lower rates than U.S.-born citizens.
Y'all surely know the stories. There have been little girls in Texas raped and murdered by people who have come across the border illegally. There have been family after family after family in the state of Texas alone that have been physically beaten, abused, harmed, or had their homes or their neighborhoods decimated.
Meanwhile, nearly 200 immigrant and civil rights groups have sent a letter to the Biden administration urging it to take immediate action to protect immigrant communities while it still can. The groups asked Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas to close existing detention facilities and halt expansion plans. Private profit-making companies hold 90% of detained immigrants. The coalition also asked the administration to release immigrants while they go through their immigration proceedings, beginning with particularly vulnerable people with health conditions and those eligible for parole. The coalition said immigrants can and should be able to go through their proceedings in community with the support of loved ones and access to legal support. One of the California groups which signed the letter is SIREN, the Services, Immigrant Rights, and Education Network. Its executive director, Hui Tran, said he hasn't heard of any response from the Biden administration to the letter, but he said there is strong action the state of California and localities should take, such as strong sanctuary policies, which call for no cooperation with Immigration and Customs Enforcement and no use of public resources to support its operations.
And we also need to see more resources dedicated to the kind of services that help us protect these communities. So legal services, we also need to see additional resources to support immigrant families for anything from housing to healthcare. And being that we are in California, I think the biggest thing we can ask of elected officials as well is to stay strong. Like, California obviously is a target for the Trump administration and for conservative forces across the country. And we know that political will can bend, in the sense that there are folks who probably have future aspirations and they may think this is the time to kind of go with the flow for where things stand. And we want our elected officials to know that that's not acceptable.
Tran says immigrants' rights groups have been having conversations since last spring about how to respond to a Trump presidency. He said there's a strong need for U.S. citizens who are not at risk of deportation to take part in county-based rapid response networks to be prepared to jump into action if an ICE raid occurs.
Because people without status or people with limited forms of status are much more at risk if they are going to put themselves in the front of the pathway or try to be observers to make sure that ICE and other federal law enforcement agencies stick within their constitutional mandates and authorities, right? So honestly, if there are folks who are citizens and they feel compelled and they feel moved to help, to be an ally, be a part of the rapid response networks.
Tran said the rapid response networks are county-based, but his group SIREN, the Services, Immigrant Rights, and Education Network, can help people connect to the appropriate local network. I'm Eileen Alfandari for KPFA News.
Ray Hamill brings us details of all this week's big local sports stories, including all the latest on the NCS football playoffs and how one local high school athlete made some league history in this report.
two local schools will play for a North Coast Section football championship and a place in this year's state playoffs this weekend. Hello and welcome to this week's K-Mud News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on that story in just a moment as we take a look at all of the big local sports stories of the week, including how College of the Redwoods football secured a third straight bowl game berth, how one local high school tennis player made some league history, some college basketball, news of the All-League and MVP selections in soccer, and how the South Fork boys basketball team fared in their season opener this week. But first up, two local high school teams will play for a North Coast Section Championship on Saturday after dominating wins for both of them in their section semifinals this past weekend. On Saturday afternoon, the Arcata Tigers will play Miramonte in the NCS Division 6 Championship game, which will take place at McKinleyville High School. And later in the day, the Ferndale Wildcats will play Moreau Catholic in the Division 7 decider at Hayward High School in the Bay Area. The Tigers, who are the top seeds in their bracket, comfortably took care of business in their semi-final showdown against Petaluma last Friday night, scoring touchdowns on 10 of their 11 possessions and winning 69-34. Junior quarterback Luke Lemke accounted for 5 of his team's touchdowns in the win, running in for 3 scores and passing for 2 more. The game was close early on, but the Tigers began to take control late in the first half, and they dominated their opponents after the break, pulling away for the lopsided victory. Not to be outdone, the Ferndale Wildcats were equally impressive on Saturday afternoon, rolling over Piedmont 43-7 in wet and muddy conditions at Ferndale High School. Quarterback Tanner Pigeon scored 5 of Ferndale's 6 touchdowns in the win, including breaking free for a 71-yard touchdown late in the first quarter to put the Cats up 15-0. After that, there was no way back for the visiting Highlanders, who had trouble matching up against a physical Ferndale team in the tough conditions. The Cats, who were seeded number 2 in their bracket, have now won 7 straight playoff games dating back to last year, and they will be playing for a second consecutive NCS crown when they travel to take on the top seeds in the bracket on Saturday night. Also in action last weekend, the Del Norte Warriors lost their Division 7 semi-final at Moreau Catholic by a score of 14-7, while in Division 4, the number 1 seeded Ukiah Wildcats lost their semi-final against number 5 Redwood by a score of 28-25, to end their season. In local college football news, meanwhile, College of the Redwoods dropped its regular season finale at Syracuse by a score of 41-18 on Saturday, and finished 3rd in the American Pacific 7 Conference. The Corsairs, however, did receive some good news on Sunday when it was announced they would get to host a postseason bowl game for the 3rd straight year. Redwoods will play West Hills in the 2024 Grizzly Bowl game at the Redwood Bowl on Friday, December the 6th, with kickoff set for 6 p.m. 2 years ago, the Corsairs lost to Monterey Peninsula in the 2022 Grizzly Bowl, and last year they defeated Hartnell 63-0 in the 2023 Grizzly Bowl, which was their first postseason victory in 3 decades. CR closed out the regular season 7-3, while West Hills is 6-4. The Corsairs got some more good news later in the week when 11 of their players were included on the American Pacific 7 All-Conference team, including unanimous Defensive Player of the Year Connor Long of Del Norte. In local high school tennis, meanwhile, the HDNL's Lily Bazemore has made some league history by becoming the first ever local tennis player to win a North Coast Section Championship. The impressive North Coast Prep Junior won all 4 of her matches at last week's Division 2 NCS tournament, including a 6-2, 6-0 win over San Domenico's Carly Amborn in the final. Bazemore, who also won this year's number 1 singles tournament at the HDNL Championships, won all 4 of her NCS matches in straight sets and never lost more than 2 games in any of them. Also this past week, the HDNL announced the All-League selections and MVPs in boys and girls soccer. Fortuna's Jesus Herrera was named outfield MVP for the boys after leading the Huskies to a league title this fall. For the girls, Eureka senior midfielder Angelina Conant was named outfield MVP in the Big Four after playing a key role for the Loggers on their march to a league and NCS championship double. Arcata's Sonia Vivoda-Wallig was named the conference goalkeeper MVP. In the Little Four, a pair of junior standouts were named MVPs. St. Bernard's defender, Sahara Tupua, was named outfield MVP after leading the Crusaders to an NCS Division III championship, while Ferndale's Tinley Pigeon was named the conference goalkeeper MVP. In local college basketball, the College of the Redwoods men's team continued their impressive start to the new season with a strong showing at last weekend's Ed Boyle Invitational Tournament at Mendocino College. The Corsairs won all three tournament games, including a hard-fought 68-67 win over the host team in Saturday's final. Former Fortuna Husky Alfonso Medina hit a game-winning layup with under 3 seconds remaining in the championship game as the Corsairs stretched their winning streak to 6 straight and improved to 7-1 on the season. Medina was named to the all-tournament team while CR's Brandon Lucas was named tournament MVP. The College of the Redwoods women's team did not fare quite as well as the Corsairs lost both of their games at the Sierra tournament. On Friday, the CR women fell 60-51 to Sierra College, and they followed that with a 63-46 loss to City College of San Francisco on Saturday. The Corsairs are now 3-4 on the season. And finally this week, it was a good start to the new boys basketball season for the South Fork Cubs. The Cubs played Fort Bragg on Tuesday night and won 74-69. Senior Wesley Way had a big night in the win and led all scorers with 19 points, including 10 of his team's 22 fourth quarter points to help keep the Timberwolves at bay. And that's this week's Came Out of the News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Michael McCaskill. And thanks to our reporters, Lauren Schmidt, Vic Bedoyan, Ray Hamill, and Aline Alfandari. Cayman News is online. You can find us at cayman.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. Those are where you can see stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@cayman.org. Reporting from the Cayman Studio in Redway, I'm Joel Fickner.